This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is a subject that is of broad relevance. Because, well, it turns out that virtually half of the population over the age of 50 is taking blood pressure medication. It's a pervasive problem. And we're going to talk to an expert. He is one of our go-to people on subjects related to health and nutrition. He's Jim LaValle. His background is as a pharmacist, but he's also a certified clinical nutritionist. He's an internationally recognized clinical pharmacist. And author of 16 ebooks and 20 books, including the most recently released Your Blood Never Lies, as well as his bestseller, Cracking the Metabolic Code. And he works coaching super athletes as well as ordinary mortals. He's worked with a lot of sports teams. He was named one of the 50 most influential pharmacists by American Druggist magazine. And Jim, many of our listeners are familiar with you, and I just get tired reading all your accolades, so I'm going to just go right to our discussion. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
You've accomplished a lot in the field. And obviously hypertension is front and center in the news these days because we know that there's an increased effort to address hypertension. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happened in terms of the guidelines for blood pressure?
Well, the first thing is that the guidelines have become incredibly more aggressive, meaning that people that used to be borderline hypertensive and would be thought of, hey, we're not going to medicate you yet. We're going to look at lifestyle, watch. Hopefully, you're going to improve some exercise and dietary habits. But the bar got lowered for when it was recommended for people to be medicated. And this literally created a situation where half of the U.S. population as adults were considered to be hypertensive. So this is pretty amazing, right? So I think it's a big issue because, you know, a lot of side effects with medication.
Right. You know, and I read the position paper that advocated for transforming what we used to call borderline blood pressure. Borderline means, okay, you don't have high blood pressure yet. It's just borderline and got to watch out. They transformed that into what's called stage one hypertension, which, you know, he actually has the name hypertension. But if you read the guidelines very carefully, you know, buried on page 19 somewhere is the statement that people with that type of blood pressure, what used to be called borderline and what is now called stage one hypertension, which is actually, it's like blood pressure 80 to 90 diastolic, which is, you know, pretty good. And I think it's like 120 to 130 systolic.
Right.
That's considered the new, you know, it's not a red light. It's like a yellow light. You know,
right.
it's considered a warning that they should be treated with lifestyle first and not with medication. However, my fear is that, and, you know, as you know, doctors are very literal. This is hypertension. And, you know, many of them are going to dish medication to their patients. They didn't read the guidelines very carefully. And, oh, by the way, it takes a long time to talk guidelines. It's easy to just reach for the prescription pad and scribble a prescription for calcium channel blocker or beta blocker or an ARB or an ACE inhibitor. And, you know, enough said. And then, you know, you're okay. Your patient's protected. You did your thing. You know, you follow the guidelines.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues, first of all, it's, you know, we do a miserable job of teaching lifestyle. So, you know, right away when we think of, oh, well, it's based on lifestyle, that there should be some lifestyle, you know, counseling. It would be great if more people got that. I find in general that most people blow right past that. So the consumer really doesn't even understand, what they're supposed to do. And good luck trying to, you know, dig down through all the different internet gurus on how do you lose weight and exercise, right? Because everybody's got an opinion, and most of the people that are throwing out their opinion actually aren't degreed in the conditions that they're throwing the information out with. So it's kind of an interesting situation. But I think one of the biggest issues is that, you know, people have to understand that once your blood pressure is going up, there's other things behind it. It could be stress. It could be the fact you're insulin resistant. Maybe you have familial issues around it. It could be environmental burden. There could be a lot of different reasons as to why an individual could have a problem with hypertension. And so that's probably the biggest thing is that, oh, we're just going to medicate you, but we're not going to really dig down and figure out why.
Jim, we were chatting a little bit before this podcast, and we were discussing a new study, and it's a very robust study. It was done in JAMA, which looks at the effects of medicating precisely this population, actually a population with a little higher blood pressure, 90 up to 99 diastolic, second number, and I think it was 130 to 139. Which is pretty high. I mean, most doctors would say, hey, you got to medicate these people. But these were people who did not have any risk factors, or they had minimal risk factors. In other words, they'd not had a stroke. They didn't have enlarged hearts. They didn't have diabetes. They didn't have bypass or stent. In other words, or heart attacks or angioplasty. In other words, they were people who we wanted to prevent problems with, you know, and that makes sense because we got it. A lot of people say, what can I do to prevent the leading cause of death? You know, heart attacks, strokes. And what happened remarkably was it did not make a difference in who died or how soon they died. Moreover, it didn't even reduce cardiovascular death or cardiovascular events. So that's got to be a study that, you know, unfortunately, I don't think anybody knows about this study. I mean, it maybe got some attention in the inner circles at the American College of Cardiology, but has it trickled down to the primary care practitioner in, you know, Des Moines or in Oshkosh? You know, probably not.
Yeah, I doubt it. And you know, once again, I think one of the biggest problems we get into is we start to use medication for prevention. And prevention is a whole different game than actively treating someone who has a disease. Mm-hmm. And so I think when we start to reach for that prescription pad as a way to prevent, I just haven't seen that many instances where I can point to a lot of different drug therapies and go, wow, that really extended someone's life. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously in acute situations, you know, or things like conditions or diseases, that are really significant. It's different. But when you're talking about true prevention and wellness, that's a whole different ballgame. And I think once again, when you give that medication just to control blood pressure, and yet their all-cause mortality and their risk of cardiovascular disease didn't change, it's because their lifestyle factors most likely did not get addressed, which is, how much am I exercising? What kind of food am I eating? What am I getting exposed to? What kind of stress am I under? How many hours of sleep am I getting? These things are really critically important when you're talking about, I believe anyway, how long someone's going to live and how well they're going to live. You know, just teaching people simple things like, I was just at it. I was at the International Fasting Summit. It was at the Keck Center for Longevity at the University of Southern California School of Medicine. And there were hundreds and hundreds of healthcare professionals.
And by the way, that's a place where Dr. Longo is from, who's a big fast mimicking diet, FMD guy. Who's produced the Prolon diet. And, you know, there's remarkable studies on how fasting or intermittent fasting or, you know, even time-restricted feeding, you know, delaying breakfast until noon or something and, you know, not eating for 16 hours, how that can sort of reboot your whole system and maybe a really valuable strategy for people with high blood pressure and other conditions.
Well, in fact, fasting mimic diet actually has been shown to reduce blood pressure. So there were some interesting human trials that were there, that they were, you know, kind of showing all the data on. And, you know, pretty fascinating. But my point being is is that something as simple as managing food intake can have a dramatic impact. And sometimes it can have a more dramatic impact than medication. And the next step is maybe nutrients that you should get from your diet or herbal extracts that could help with longevity could also be a benefit. Because, you know, with blood pressure, as you know, Dr. Hoffman, I mean, let's face it. I mean, a lot of people are walking around deficient in magnesium, and magnesium has been shown time and time again to lower blood pressure because, you know, nobody's eating vegetables. Mm-hmm. Nobody's drinking green drinks. You know, no, we don't have really mineral-rich soil anymore that our food gets grown in. And so when I really begin to look at hypertension, it's almost like a model for how things go wrong when we live in a modern world where we don't get enough sleep, we don't get the right kind of exercise, we're under a lot of stress, our food is nutrient deprived, and now all of a sudden our blood vessels start to get stiff, and we start to get a lot of endothelial damage, which causes changes in that ability of those blood vessels to be able to expand and contract on demand. Mm-hmm. And I think it's critical. We even have to worry about it. I mean, there's latest studies out showing that there's even some thought that there's, with the ARB class of hypertensive medications, there may be some increased cancer risk even.
Yeah, I mean, they do cause people to cough, and, that certainly suggests there's some inflammation, chronic inflammation of the lungs, and maybe in some individuals that goes beyond merely coughing to inflammation that may spur the development of cancer. So, yeah, you know, that is a concern, you know, with these medications that are so widely prescribed. Let's talk a little bit about the DASH diet, because, you know, that's sort of the standard recommendation for hypertension, the DASH diet. You know, what is it, and how does it sometimes come up short? You know, could we do better than that?
Yeah, well, I think the DASH diet, I mean, it's for me, it's still too high in carbohydrates. It focuses on trying to cut down sodium,
low-fat dairy. It must be skim milk.
Dairy,
yeah,
right.
No salt. Very little salt.
Yeah, right. And you know what? I mean, there's a plethora of studies coming out now showing salt restriction really is not where it's at.
Have heart failure. You know, a certain subset of patients very sensitive to salt.
That's right.
You know, but it's always. You know, we always take these broad brushstrokes and say, well, everybody should restrict salt. Well, for some people, that's valid. Maybe, I don't know, to
that's
a quarter
right.
of the population. But, you know, some people actually have a paradoxical reaction. Their blood pressure goes up when they restrict sodium. Their blood vessels clamp
exactly.
down.
Exactly. And so for me, the DASH diet, one of all, you don't get healthy fats. Healthy fats definitely help.
It's very low fat.
In terms of energy production, in terms of cell membrane health, right? I mean, you need fats. All of our cell membranes are made out of fat, so we need fat. The fact that it's higher in carbohydrate, I think, still strikes to the biggest problem of the diet because, you know, people in general, you get heart disease usually because you're insulin resistant. You either have an insulin resistance, and even if you say, well, or you're under stress, but when you're under stress, you become insulin resistant because cortisol causes you to become insulin resistant. So it really beckons the issue of nobody's counting carbs yet the way they need to. And I mean, I spend my life trying to teach people how to count carbs and not just the consumer, the healthcare consumer. There was a doctor in this event that I was at the fasting summit that actually said, oh yeah, I just put my patients on 70% carbohydrates. And I went, do you mean 70% total load? I mean, what are you talking about? She really didn't even, because I asked her, she really didn't even have any clue what she meant when she said that. And so the when you look at across the board in terms of lowering cardiovascular risk, lowered cardiovascular risk is associated more with a modified low-carb diet than any other diet successfully over any kind of extended period of time.
Mm-hmm. So when you and that's when you been begin, demonstrated, yeah, for sure,
over and over and over again, right? But we're still moving towards ketogenic diets, or no. Now we're going to do a vegetarian or a vegan diet. Most people that are eating vegan aren't eating a vegetarian diet; they're eating a carbitarian diet. They're making it a perfect
lots
excuse to eat all the rice they can, right?
Yeah,
because everybody's too many people's serotonin pools are down, so they need more rice and bread. So the point being is that the DASH diet, look, it's better than not doing anything at all, mm-hmm. right? When you think of how an average person eats, right? What got them there to begin with? It's better than nothing, but it doesn't get you all the way there in terms of nutrient intake, the need for good fats, the need to restrict carbohydrates, and the need to really provide essential nutrients that somebody needs to actually be healthy.
Okay. They've actually done some research on what's called a modified DASH diet, which is a DASH diet where they've added some fats. They've added more fat, and they've cut the carbohydrates, and it actually outperforms the original DASH diet. And plus, it tastes better. It's really, if somebody has high blood pressure, and this is a condition that can affect you for, 20, 30, 40 years of life, that's kind of like a long sentence of eating really bland food, no sodium, a very low skim milk. Forget about it.
Exactly.
Once
they say it's a modified DASH diet, it's not a DASH diet anymore.
It's more Mediterranean or low carb.
It's more of a Mediterranean diet, and I would even argue that when you look at the Mediterranean diet, it's great for people in Greece and Italy because they walk everywhere and they buy their food fresh. Yeah. They exercise regularly. They get a good night's sleep. We, unfortunately, what I find we do here in the U.S. is we keep taking things away thinking that that'll be just enough weight to balance the scale, right? Meaning, hey, we'll take away all carbohydrates to block your insulin resistance. We're going to go totally ketogenic, and that way we'll really shut down those insulin receptors. Instead of really trying to teach people, a lifestyle that says, how can you eat flavorful food that tastes great, that yes, you're going to, I always tell people, how about trying to fast between meals for a start? Would be a great one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
try to graze all day long from morning to bedtime. Try getting that right. And I think it's really important for people who are trying to overcome, problems like hypertension and insulin resistance, because these are the big things that are driving most diseases, right? It's important because then we can start to think about adding in important nutrients. I think people need to drink green drinks because people don't eat enough vegetables. I think using something like aged garlic extract, I know we've talked about it before, but Kyolic probably has better data on it for lowering blood pressure mm-hmm. than any other dietary supplement I know, maybe aside from magnesium. But magnesium is an essential nutrient mm-hmm. that your body needs to make your blood vessels function anyway. So it's kind of unfair to compare the two, one being an essential nutrient, the other one being kind of what I call just a rock star botanical. But you put the two together, it becomes pretty powerful.
Yeah, let's review some of the research on Kyolic aged garlic extract for high blood pressure. Because some people say, well, the research, they looked at a couple of dozen people and, maybe the study was done in, Taiwan or, and how reliable is that research and what does it tell us?
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, the research regarding hypertension, blood vessel permeability or viability, alterations in what's called pulse wave velocity or how efficient your nervous system, your neurovascular network, is communicating with your blood vessels. Those have been done in the U.S. So Dr. Matt Budoff has done studies that exactly looked at those kind of parameters. But probably the most important grouping of studies were the studies that were done by Dr. Reed in Australia, where they repeatedly looked at either people that were resistant hypertensives, they were on anywhere between 2 and 3 medications mm-hmm. and still were failing.
Yeah, that's often the case, unfortunately. Yeah.
Exactly. And what they found in those situations were people would get an average of 11-point systolic drop and a 6-point diastolic drop. Now, interestingly, and this study has not been published yet, but they've shown that in addition to the blood pressure benefit and the last trial that Dr. Reed did, in Australia, is in addition to the blood pressure benefit, it changed the microbiome in the individuals. So they actually showed that they were changing the diversity of the microbiome for the better, which I think has an effect on systemic inflammation.
Yeah.
And then it was interesting in people who had an MTHFR gene SNP, if they were given B12 and folate with their aged garlic extract, which their blood vessel formula has that in it, lo and behold, it worked in 100% of their folks that had the hypertensive numbers, versus when they were just giving aged garlic alone, getting it to work about 76% of the time, which, by the way, a dietary supplement that works 76% of the time in people with hypertension to drop their systolic and diastolic blood pressures is still
stunning. Pretty darn good. I mean, given the fact that I have sometimes have to prescribe medications, and you know, sometimes we have to try 2, 3, 4 before we arrive at one that actually works. So something that has a 3 out of 4 chance of affecting blood pressure in the get-go, that's pretty good. And then it's interesting that the methylation with the B vitamins seems to amplify that effect. You know, we actually do measure SNPs. We look at C677 and 1298, and we notice that the people who have certain genetic mutations, some have high homocysteine, but even without high homocysteine, they have high risk of cerebrovascular disease, especially sometimes heart disease as well.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Is it just a blood pressure effect? Is that all chiolic aged garlic extract does? Because, you know, after all,
good again, question.
You know, if we're just lowering the blood pressure, it might be like a medication. You know, the medications lower blood pressure. They don't fix anything else. Is there any other protective effect? Because, that, you know, what we're after is we're protecting the heart, we're protecting the brain, we're protecting the kidneys. Those are the main target organs if you have hypertension. So any hint that there's other ancillary benefits?
Sure. Well, first of all, so when you look at aged garlic or chiolic, it reduces oxidized LDL. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but when you oxidize your lipids, it creates as much havoc and damage to your kidneys as it does to your blood vessels. And so reducing oxidized LDL by some 88% is, you know, staggering. And that reduction in oxidative damage spares the kidneys. It reduces the amount of oxidized LDL cholesterol, which triggers plaque formation. So if you don't oxidize your lipids as much, that means you're going to be laying down less plaque. Now, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize about chiolic, which I personally think is one of the most important aspects of it, and I think we may have talked about this before, but I just got to mention it. It's that it causes an improvement in vagal tone. So it literally changes That's your stress response in your brain. They've shown that it alters the HPA axis, hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, which is what gets shifted when you're under chronic stress. And when your brain gets under stress, it starts to send a signal to your through that neurovascular network that your blood vessels are going to stay stiff. And that's what's called a loss of vagal tone. And loss of vagal tone.
It's like an emergency response kind of thing. You make sure that you maintain adequate blood pressure in the face of stress. And, you know, it's primitive because in a fight or flight situation, literally, you have reduced circulation to your hands and feet because in animals who fight, that's where they get injured. They bleed and they get bitten. And we humans, we have a little bit of that. That's why, you know, you shake somebody's hand and it's like a cold, clammy hand. That's a person who's probably under a certain amount of sympathetic nervous system stress.
That's exactly right. And the thing that has been correlated to that is that when you lose vagal tone, when your blood vessels are no longer pliable, and when you are under constant sympathetic duress, first of all, you're releasing that act of producing more adrenaline and noradrenaline. You're going to A, make your blood vessels tighter, but B, it drives your cortisol up. And that means your insulin activity is going to become less effective. And so when you can improve vagal tone, loss of vagal tone is absolutely correlated with worsening of heart disease, acute effects, increased risk of heart attack, increased risk of cerebrovascular incidents. So vagal tone, and that's why everybody's talking about heart rate variability today. Or if you've got an Apple Watch and you hit your button to breathe deep, the reason the Apple Watch is telling you to breathe deep, or whatever watch it is you use, I got nothing to do with Apple. But whatever that app is that's telling you take a deep breath for a minute, when you breathe deep, you reset your vagal tone. And so that's why it all kind of comes together. You know, you take something like aged garlic, it helps your blood vessels to become more pliable. You practice the art of, you know, breath work, just breathing a little bit deeper a few times a day. It can have incredible effects on your blood pressure. I mean, it's been shown over and over again that by using, these kind of devices, that you can actually retrain your nervous system and you will lower your blood pressure.
Indeed. Okay, so lots more to talk about on the subject of hypertension, because there are many, many ways in which we can reduce our dependency on medication, avoid medication altogether. Really, that's the name of the game, because virtually all the medications have a side effect, one or another, that can be unpleasant or downright dangerous. We're not here to say, all of you listening to this podcast, immediately, throw your medications in the drain and start taking aged garlic extract. But there's certainly ways to get off the medication merry-go-round using natural approaches to blood pressure. So we're going to continue on that theme with our guest. He's Jim LaValle. Jim's one of our point-and-shoot experts. He's versatile and can tell us about high blood pressure in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.